It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm PJ Hansen, your host. Well, the most significant fire so far this summer in Tuolumne County has been the Canyon incident that ignited late in the evening on August 8th. It burned 85 acres and threatened areas around Tuolumne, including the entire Ponderosa Hills community and the Tuolumne Band of Miwok Indians Rancheria. Here to give a recap of that significant incident and what was witnessed, we have Tuolumne County Sheriff David Vasquez, CAL FIRE Tuolumne Calaveras Unit Chief Nick Cashy, and Tuolumne County Office of Emergency Services Assistant Director Dory Beats. Thank you all for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I'll start first with Chief Cashy. You know, kind of take us back to that first night and early morning hours. You know, what was witnessed when firefighters were arriving on scene?
You bet. So we received the 911 call and had the dispatch around close to 11 o'clock on the 8th. And the first arriving units had a fire in the Tuolumne River Canyon off of Buchanan Mine Road, on what I would refer to as the downslope end of the road between the road and the river. This area, any fire we get in a river canyon, especially in the peak summer months, poses a significant threat, especially in that area, because on the uphill side of the road, we do have structures, and you get into more populated areas as you're working towards Tuolumne. So the firefighters who responded had the fire on the lower end side of the road. It also happens to fall right into the direct protection area boundary between CAL FIRE and the Stanislaus National Forest. So we were able to have engagement from the Stanislaus National Forest as well with the CAL FIRE resources. The activity that night, the fire spread and ended up going across the road to the uphill side, which then posed an immediate threat to the Miramani area. And so the initial attack resources started to place resource orders, and then working with our sheriff's office counterparts in planning for the safety of the community through evacuations should the fire continue to progress up towards Miramani Road, and what the potential threats would be there going into the next operational period. And we were able to have some success that evening with some calculated and aggressive firefighting from the ground resources in tying in from the road down to the river to at least stop that piece of the fire, as we kind of had two threats. Potentials was, should it go down and cross the river, we potentially would have a major incident on that piece. And then in addition to that, the fire on the uphill side of the road and the threat to the structures. So as the morning hours came around, we were able to get a solid plan and start setting up a command structure and resource orders to handle what we could be potentially a pretty devastating fire should the weather and the sun and all those things that come with the daylight add to the fire intensity.
The fact that it was the evening hours too, was that kind of additional challenges, the dark conditions and also being down in that canyon?
Yeah, extremely steep country for the ground resources to operate in. And then again, with the darkness, going into any kind of river drainage like that, you always run that risk of falling and roll out and things like that. I would say that the evening hours helped in regard to fire activity because we get naturally cooler temperatures, and then we also get more of a down canyon, down slope push from the wind, which is counter to fire's natural progression of wanting to move uphill, which would have put it more threatening into the structures.
I'll go over to Sheriff Vasquez with the Tuolumne County Sheriff's Office. So during that first evening and early morning hours, what was kind of your role with the Sheriff's Office?
Oh, thank you, BJ. Initially, when I received the notification on my cell phone, immediate concern for that area. I'm very familiar with that area. Most of my staff is very familiar with that area. Most commonly hiking in and eradicating illegal marijuana grows, so we know exactly how steep that terrain is. And just the thought of having a fire start in that area was concerning for all of us. So upon receiving the initial notification, it's all hands on deck. Everybody starts towards that area to start essentially delegating different responsibilities of who's going to do what. I arrived shortly after 11 o'clock and made contact with the fire chief who was on scene at the time. The fire was moving very quickly, and we had staff that were serving in the patrol capacity already initiating warnings, already coordinating with Communication Center to send out Everbridge alert warnings. Fire had spread even faster than that, and through a collaborative effort, it was decided that we should initiate orders. And those came out, I would say, within the first 30 minutes of being on scene there, and just kind of give you an idea of how rapid things were growing. And as the chief said, Miramonte, Sunrise area, and then having greater concern for Ponderosa. I think what really goes into the thought process is how much time you're going to need to essentially move 1,000 people or have enough staff to go door-to-door with over 500 residences. And I think all of those things in a collaborative effort are discussed, heavily considered when those decisions are being made. I always come back to gratitude anytime we're talking about fire or any other critical incident, and just all the agencies, our Cal Fire partners, DCU, you know, seeing the special district folks there at 11, 12 midnight at night. And like you say, it's in the middle of the night, people are sleeping. So that's something that we always think about. But to see all the familiar faces, you know, Chief Gomez, Chief Louie from the Rancheria, it's always very humbling to see everybody there, our tribal partners, Tuolumne, Band of Miwok Indians, who always step in and offer support. It's just very overwhelming. So all of those things happening at one time, it's a lot. It's a lot that goes into that operation, for sure.
When you unfortunately have to do those evacuation orders and warnings in the middle of the night when people, as you mentioned, are already asleep, what was that situation like? Is it most people already awake and knowing what's going on and they're just getting the information from the deputies on scene, or were you having to actually wake people up?
You would think that it's funny how we kind of internalize what people's sense of awareness are, but when you're sleeping, there's not a lot of sense of awareness that's happening. Some people were already awake and already preparing to evacuate. Some people not. Some people we were knocking on doors and waking folks up. And I think that just different levels of awareness for whatever people's lifestyles are and whatever behaviors are taking place at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, because these evacuations went in through the night as folks required different amounts of time to leave the area. And it's important to know that when you have somebody that leaves the area, just because that area is vacated doesn't mean that the responsibility goes away. We have a responsibility to the people to stay and staff those areas and make sure that people aren't coming in and committing crimes. Because unfortunately, that is something that happens. You have a lot of folks that are paying attention to when evacuations take place, and they see that as a window of opportunity to commit crimes and benefit on other folks' misfortune or how they're navigating the critical incident at that time. So I'll say this. There was a level of comfort that came with that night, knowing that we had enough people. We called in approximately 18 deputy sheriffs from across our entire office, and they all showed up without hesitation. That includes patrol, detectives, custody, CSOs, sheriff's volunteers who were staffing non-emergency lines in our EOC. We had our coordinator or our director of emergency services helping staff all those non-emergency lines, animal control, facilitating all the resources. Yeah, I really drive the point home because I really want people to know how everybody shows up for them in Tuolumne County across the board. And so that's just important to highlight that, you know, people care about this community because, you know, they're skin in the game. And so I know I'm emphasizing that a lot, but it's just really important that people know how much this community means to us.
You know, what can you say to people who, when we have these fires and they're concerned to leave their home, as you mentioned, because you don't want, you know, bad actors to come into certain areas, to kind of give them the assurance that their home's going to be in the best shape as it can be given all the circumstances?
Well, I think taking that into consideration, I always approach that from a position of empathy. I wouldn't want to leave my house either. I feel, you know, a person has to feel protected in their rights and their, you know, a person's castle, that's their castle, and people are going to want to stay and protect that. But I know that there is a balance. Know this for the folks that have those concerns, is we will do everything in our power, which includes calling in support, which we did in this last mission from Calaveras, Stanislaus, Merced, San Joaquin counties. All of them sent resources, local municipalities, Modesto, Atwater, Manteca, to protect your property. People should know that we will support public safety and protecting those communities should you decide to leave. Know that testing the boundaries of fire, and you know, the chief can attest that fire is going to fire, and we can try and guess and we can try and calculate behavior, and I leave that to the experts, but if you test the boundaries, you could be putting folks in harm's way, including my deputy sheriffs, and that causes us to balance a different decision-making process, and that is, when is it too dangerous to go back for somebody? And will we go back if it's too dangerous? And the answer is, I will never put deputies in harm's way. That's not an acceptable risk for the totality of the circumstances. And that means if somebody's refusing to leave, that's a decision that they have to make. But know that you don't get to make those decisions on behalf of children or folks that are minors. We always ask and help facilitate the safe evacuation of family members that might need extra time or members of our vulnerable population.
We're recapping the Canyon Fire on this weekend's Motherlode Views. Pleased to be joined in studio by the Sheriff of Tuolumne County, David Vasquez. We have the CAL FIRE Tuolumne Calaveras Unit Chief, Nick Cashy. Also, Dory Beats, who is the Office of Emergency Services Assistant Director for Tuolumne County. We'll pick up the conversation with her during the next segment. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
We are talking about the Canyon Fire on this weekend's Motherlode Views. It ignited on August 8th, burned 85 acres, threatened areas around Tuolumne, including the entire Ponderosa Hills community, Tuolumne Band of Miwok Indians, Rancheria as well. Joined in studio by CAL FIRE Tuolumne Calaveras Unit Chief Nick Cashy, Tuolumne County Sheriff David Vasquez, and Dory Beats, who is the Tuolumne County Office of Emergency Services Assistant Director. Dory Beats, I'll start with you during segment number two. You know, we heard from Chief Cashy and Sheriff Vasquez. What were you doing that first evening with the Canyon Fire?
Well, like everyone else, I did receive a call and a notification. I happened to be reside in the initial warning and then later the ordered area. But my job and our job within OES is to support those agencies like fire and law enforcement out in the field. So my first task was activating the Emergency Operations Center, getting to the EOC, making sure that we can get our public information line up and running and staffed, and very thankful for not only staff that came in from county departments, but also our local volunteers, including Twain Hart CERT and our Tuolumne County CERT, to help staff those. It's really important to get that information line up and running as soon as possible. And then also, thirdly, of high priority is determining where a shelter is going to go. Obviously, based on fire activity and recommendations from law enforcement, we try to get that up and running as soon as possible so that they can get the information out, we can get the information out, and individuals who have been ordered to evacuate have a place to go, especially in the middle of the night.
You know, given that there was such a wide area that was evacuated, did you have quite a few people come to those shelters?
Yeah, so we saw the first night, we started out with one evacuation shelter at our enrichment center, and later had to open a second because we were at capacity over at our Sonora Senior Center. So we had 30-some-odd individuals at each of those locations. And one new caveat is we are mandated by law when we open up a shelter to co-locate, not inside the building, but next to pet shelters. So we had just as many pets, almost just as many pets as we did have individuals at one point.
I imagine, too, just, you know, from a personal perspective, that had to be a night, you know, evacuating yourself and at the same time coordinating the OES response.
Yes, this is the second time, obviously, during the Rim Fire I was under warning. But we do what we do, and we're good at what we do, and we support each other. Lucky enough that I had, obviously, a significant other at home handling all of that for me because I had to go. So it's what we do.
I'll go back over to Chief Cashy. So you were talking a lot about the first night, the response, and then so when the sun came out the next morning, can you tell us a little bit about kind of the strategy that next day?
Absolutely. So the next morning, as the initial attack from the evening had some successes, we started to identify the critical areas that were going to pose the biggest threat for the next operational period. In addition to that, because it was along the direct protection area boundary between Cal Fire, TCU, and the Stanislaus National Forest, we made the decision to enter into unified command to ensure both the forest and Cal Fire TCU needs were met in regards to mitigating the incident. The fire ended up being about 90%, 89% onto Cal Fire SRA and 10% onto the Stanislaus. But again, with the outstanding relationship we have there with Beck Johnson and the unified incident commander being Pat Lang, it was seamless in the ability to mitigate the incident with resources from both the federal and the state side, as well as local government. So as we were projecting out for the day of what the potential fire behavior would be, our plan was to aggressively attack it by having an early up with the fixed wing and rotary wing aircraft due to the location of the fire on that slope. And so we did have the fixed wing aircraft with retardant being dropped early in the morning, right around the 8 o'clock hour, and then being supported throughout the day with the three rotary wing aircraft to take the intensity out of the fire to allow us to then engage with the ground resources, putting in those control lines to keep it from spreading. So as that's going on, we're also building out the incident organization in the event that those tactics are unsuccessful and becomes a larger incident. So it's a very active day, the first day after the initial attack, in essentially planning for two incidents. One that you're going to be successful with, and then in the event that the conditions warrant that success is going to take more than just that operational period. For this fire, as the heat of the day came upon us and we continued to have success, by the evening, we were confident that as far as the fire spread went, we had mitigated that aspect, at least in the immediate. And then it became ensuring the control lines were that in which would keep it there over the next several days and not pose a threat to the community anymore. Overall, with the fixed-wing aircraft that we had dropping on the fire that day, very fortunate to have the six fixed-wing air tankers dropping a total of 14,800 gallons of retardant that we were able to capitalize on, things like the Miramonte fuel break that were reduced fuel zones that aided in those control lines.
Then, Sheriff Vasquez, you know, when people are allowed back into their homes, what point or what was kind of the role of the sheriff's office at that particular situation?
We ensured that from the point that we start issuing warnings to include evacuation orders, we staff those areas. The goal is to saturate points of ingress and egress to make sure that people who are in those areas actually belong there by verifying identification to addresses, because we get folks that want to go into those areas that don't belong in there. So when I say that we staff those areas and we saturate it, we put a lot of law enforcement in there to ensure that the people who are coming back in for repopulation are supposed to be there, and that we're available should there be any assistance or anything else needed from them upon repopulation. We also try to do it in a timely manner, because we know that some folks are displaced, or they're staying with families, or they're staying in hotels, or in some cases in shelters, animals, all of these things. So again, this is a very thoughtful process. It's a collaborative effort with our fire and all of our support agencies, as well as to when we can bring people safely back home. And so I would just say that as soon as we issue those orders, we are already thinking about when the soonest it is to get people back into their homes safely. And that is a collaborative effort. Yeah.
Chief Cashy, do you remember, were there any like key moments on this fire where that was kind of like a key moment where it kind of cut it off and it could have gone the other direction or anything like that? I remember with the Rim Fire, Paper Cabin Ridge was a moment that a lot of firefighters would talk about as kind of a key moment.
Yeah, key moment would be the forward progression stopping at Miramonte Road. And then from there it was going with direct attack tactics down both flanks of the fire to tie it back into Buchanan Mine. And so once those direct lines were tied in between Miramonte Road and Buchanan Mine Road, that was that tipping point of success for that initial stopping of the forward progress.
That's great. How about fuel breaks? What kind of role did fuel breaks play with this fire?
The Miramonte fuel break was instrumental in giving a reduced fuel zone along Miramonte Road and the structures along with their defensible space to allow resources to engage. Had that not been there, it would have been extremely a higher level of danger to put resources ahead of a fire on top of a ridge like that in heavy fuels. So the fact that that existed not only allowed for the fire to come up to and serve as somewhat a control line off of that fuel break for us to engage, it also allowed us to put resources safely into areas that should the fire become active, we would still be safe in being up on top of that ridge without a direct threat to the personnel.
kind of drives home the purpose and the importance of the fuel breaks around these communities.
Absolutely. I say with any successes on a wildland incident, it's a culmination of several different variables that just come together. And that fuel break was instrumental as one of those variables in coming together and aiding the suppression.
Need to take one more break. We're talking about the Canyon Fire on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host, joined in studio by a panel of guests. We have CAL FIRE Tuolumne Calaveras Unit Chief Nick Cashy, Dory Beats, who is with the Tuolumne County Office of Emergency Services, and Tuolumne County Sheriff David Vasquez. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. More coming up in our final segment in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
We're doing a recap on the Canyon Fire. That's been the biggest fire so far in Tuolumne County, the one of most note that it caused a wide-scale evacuation so far this summer fire season in Tuolumne County. Joined on the program by CAL FIRE Tuolumne Calaveras Unit Chief Nick Cashy, Tuolumne County Sheriff David Vasquez, and Dory Beats, who is the Office of Emergency Services Assistant Director. Dory Beats, I'll go back over to you because the Ponderosa Hills community, that's an area that's been also identified. It was evacuated during this fire, but it's been identified for home hardening, correct?
Yeah, so to add on a little bit about preparedness side and defensible space, Tuolumne County is the fourth pilot project in the state for home hardening. So Ponderosa, Miramonte, and the Canyon View Sunset area are all within the project area, about 415 homes that we hope to do home hardening and defensible space on. And so obviously after the Canyon Fire, we've gotten a lot of phone calls about when that project's going to start because it literally was the footprint. The evacuation order was the footprint of that project area.
If they weren't interested then, they are probably now.
They are, absolutely. So we're getting a lot of phone calls.
Fire.
So, yeah.
You know, Chief Cashy, were the things that stand out kind of post-fire, kind of like, you know, things maybe like lessons learned or just kind of post-fire kind of recap?
One of the things that should be mentioned is the extensive measures that go into our preseason meetings with OES, the Sheriff's Office, our local government cooperators, Stanislaus National Forest. It really provides us that preparatory work to have a seamless interaction when you have a emergency incident in the county. And the level in which things operated on this incident, being that it had a lot of potential and there was a lot of impact to the community, it was seamless between agencies due to those preparatory measures that we take in the off season. And so those professional relationships really helped make this run as smooth as it possibly could.
You know, Dory Beats, we still have possibly a couple more months of the fire season, the peak of the summer fire season. You know, what are some things that you would advise people just to keep in mind and do right now?
Well, as we always do, which is sign up for emergency alerts. Be ready, have a go bag, have a plan, know those egress routes out of your community, talk it over and practice with your family. And obviously now that we have a lot more pets and we can accommodate pets in their shelter, having a plan for your pets as well. You know, coming, evacuating with cats and dogs in kennels or crates is definitely something that we're asking. And really just thinking ahead about all the possibilities. And that, like the Canyon Fire, it could happen in the middle of the night when most of us are asleep and really just unprepared for that type of activity at that type of hour during the day.
Chief Cashy, how about just around people's homes? Obviously, you don't want people to burn right now. It's not the season to do that. But what can people do to make sure their properties are ready?
Sure. As we enter into the fall months, ensuring that the leaf litter and pine needles that can accumulate on the roofs or in the gutters are removed, that becomes a fuel bed for fire embers should a fire be in your area that can allow the fire to then spread to the structure. And so we always want to advocate for folks to do their defensible space and 4291 compliance in that, but we want to do it the right way. And so taking advantage of those types of things as we enter into the fall. And then the other item would be is as we enter into the winter months and burning becomes more of a tool used for yard debris and things like that, to do it during a time in which the weather is wet and you can get your burning done without there being a threat onto those shoulder months like we get into the spring, into that May, that tail end of the burning season where folks technically or typically tend to rush getting it done for having not done it through the winter.
And Sheriff Vasquez, how about you? Any kind of final thoughts and things for the community post-fire?
I think just always being aware, and I always like to remind folks along with signing up for emergency alerts, pay attention to the media, social media, local radio stations, just stay attuned. And if you live around folks that you know need a little bit of assistance or, you know, maybe are elderly or members of vulnerable populations, always reminding folks to be good neighbors, check on your folks, check on people around you, make that phone call and just to see if, you know, anybody needs any assistance. At the end of the day, emergency services are going to always arrive and do their best efforts, but there's nothing like a neighbor helping out another neighbor. And just reminding everybody that, in Tuolumne County, that's not an issue. People look after each other here and everybody jumps in willing to help. I'd love to circle back real quick to what Chief Cashy said about the professional relationships, not just the professional relationships, but the amount of trust that goes into knowing the people that are in the trenches with you when this is happening to our community. And I think it goes a long way. I know we all feel a high sense of responsibility to the safety and well-being of our people in Tuolumne County. And I just would like everybody to know how watching this unfold, watching all of our staff, everybody navigate this process, and it was very humbling, and I'm always very grateful for that. And I want the people to know that they're in good hands across the board.
Chief Cashy, too, whenever there's a fire like this, people are curious about the cause. What can you tell us just about the investigation into the cause of the Canyon Fire?
Yeah, any wildland fire, we do origin and cause investigation. The Canyon Fire is currently still under investigation, and so I wouldn't want to mention any circumstances around that until we have an accurate release where we can give that information out to the public.
I want to go back to that first morning. You mentioned the aircraft. I've heard people in the community say, oh, the aircraft, they were really on it fast that early morning. What's kind of the rules for getting aircraft up during a fire like that?
Sure. So in the evening when we identified that we were going to have a heavy potential going into the morning hours, we requested what's referred to as an early up for the aircraft, which puts them ready and able to get into the air at a time which is safe, which is usually dictated by the time of sunrise due to shadows in the canyons. When they're doing their drops and their low altitude flying, having shadows and other visual obscurities can affect their safety. And so that time was identified by the base, the AirTAC base at Columbia, and we were able to put them over that fire early in the morning along with a heavy resource order that put more fixed wing from out of the area coming into Columbia for reload and able to drop on that fire. And we happened to have the ability to do that and get those resources due to fire activity was not pulling them to other fires during that request. And then that was immediately followed up with that rotary wing piece of having the helicopters being able to do the water dropping in those interior or directly on the line to support the ground resources as they engaged.
Very interesting. And were you calling resources from all across the state during that first day as well?
Yeah, when we put the resource orders in to the ordering system, it will pull resources that are available, which could be from throughout the state. So we had several out-of-county resources. And we also had a very robust response from our local agencies. Tuolumne Rancheria, Twain Hart Fire, Tuolumne District all had resources there that were helping. And really just goes to show that local cooperator piece, too, that we can't do it without them.
Yeah, all hands on deck here in the community.
Absolutely.
You know, what were the type of aircraft that were overhead?
We did have the S2T tankers that were doing the fire retardant drop. They're maneuverable in steeper terrain and are really effective in that area. And then we also had Type 1 helicopters for the water dropping piece, which would be around 1,000 gallons per drop or per load of water that they're able to bring in.
I thought I read somewhere that they were looking at down in the future, possibly nighttime aircraft as well. Is that something CAL FIRE is looking at or anything you can comment on?
Yeah, we do have nighttime aircraft resources and the ability to get them over the fire. There's a process that includes a safety checklist because night flying does pose more hazards to the aircraft. And we do have night flying bases that are already certified. Columbia is not a night flying base, but they are working towards that certification as we get more of the necessary equipment that's needed to provide that service.
Dory Beetz, I'll go back over to you one more time. Any closing comments you'd like to make as OES Assistant Director?
No, other than echoing my partners here at the table, that it is a lot of coordination and cooperation. But we truly, as the sheriff said, we also depend upon our community to be prepared themselves. It lessens what we have to do on the response side. The more individuals can be prepared, the more they can help out their communities, their fellow neighbors, and that goes a long way into ensuring that we all recover from incidents as such as the Canyon Fire.
Well, we've come to an end on today's show. I thank all three of you for coming in. I know the community is very thankful for you and your team's efforts on the Canyon Fire to keeping it as small as it was, and thank you for coming in and sharing kind of the details of that incident.
Thank you, BJ.
Thank you.
Again, we thank Tuolumne County Sheriff David Vasquez, CAL FIRE Tuolumne Calaveras Unit Chief Nick Cashy, and Dory Beats with the Tuolumne County Office of Emergency Services, talking about the Canyon Fire burned 85 acres, ignited during the evening of August 8th. I'm BJ Hansen. I was your host. We'll see you back next week for more Motherlode Views.
You've been listening to Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.